official name, the guide explained. Named after Roger Angel, an astronomer who built the largest telescopes on Earth more than half a century ago. The name makes for a lot of jokes, you know, about angels and all. We just call it Farsight. He rapped on the door very gently.
Enter!
A voice called from the other side of the door. Her guide slid it open and gestured Trudy through. It was a small office, its ceiling of smoothed rock depressingly low, its four walls blank but glowing slightly. Wall-sized smart screens, Trudy recognized. A desk painted to look like wood stood across from the door, with a conference table joined to it like the stem of a T. Behind the desk sat Jason Ulrich, director of Farsight Observatory. Professor Ulrich rose to his feet as Trudy entered, his head cocked slightly. With a hesitant smile, he gestured toward one of the conference table's chairs.
"Welcome, Dr. Yost," he said in a nasal, reedy voice. "Please to make yourself comfortable."
Ulrich was a small man, a bit shorter than Trudy and very slight in build. His face had the prominent cheekbones and high forehead of an ascetic, although his skin looked waxy, almost artificial. His hair was cropped short, as was his trim beard. Both were a soft gray, almost silver. Narrow shoulders, tiny, delicate hands. He was wearing a dark blue cardigan jacket over a white turtleneck, neat and precise. Trudy felt shabby in her dull old shirt and baggy jeans. It was Ulrich's eyes that caught Trudy's attention. They were as dark as two chips of obsidian, but they seemed blank, unfocused. She stuck out her hand. "I'm very pleased to meet you, sir." Ulrich's smile turned slightly warmer, yet he ignored her proffered hand.
"Thank you. I hope we can work well together."
He gestured toward the chair again and sat down behind his desk. Trudy took the chair. It swiveled so that it was easy for her to face Professor Ulrich. He turned to the computer screen on his desk and brushed his fingertips across it, frowning slightly.
"We should be joined by Mr. McClintock. He should be here by now."
Trudy's pulse thumped.
"He'll be here. I'll see him again. Great."
With a disappointed little sigh, Ulrich said,
"Well, I might as well begin. No sense waiting until..."
A rap on the door stopped him. It slid open and Carter McClintock stepped in, all smiles. "Professor," said McClintock as he strode toward the desk. Pulling out the chair across the table from Trudy, he added, "It's good to see you again, Trudy."
"I expected you 5 minutes ago," Ulrich said.
He neither rose from his desk chair nor offered McClintock his hand. Looking just the tiniest bit embarrassed, McClintock said, I had to answer a call of nature on the way here. Sorry, but it couldn't be helped."
"I see."
Ulrich's tone was frosty. The director swung his gaze from McClintock to Trudy, then said in a resigned tone,
"Very well, then. Let me describe our observatory and its goals to you, Dr. Yost. Mr. McClintock will fill you in on the observatory's organization and management."
The walls lit up with views of four different lunar craters. Trudy recognized the Cyclops radio telescope assembly, under construction up above them on the surface of the Sea of Moscow. Ulrich began,
"We are building 3 100-meter telescopes at Crater Mendeleev, Crater Korolev, and Crater Gagarin."
The frame around each screen lit briefly as the professor mentioned it. Trudy saw that construction was underway at each crater.
"The 100-meter main mirrors for each of these sites are being built here at Moscow. The first of them has been completed and is now being transported to Mendeleev, where it will be installed."
The buzz of a phone interrupted him. Frowning at his desktop console annoyedly, Ulrich said,
"Pardon me, that is the emergency line."
He called out,
"Answer!"
And the wall screen in front of Trudy showed the face of a young man, looking grim, troubled. His hair was a thick, dark mop, so was his ragged, dark beard. He had the saddest eyes Trudy had ever seen, dark and downcast. He looked as if he were carrying the troubles of the world on his shoulders. She saw that he was in a space suit, but he had removed its helmet.
"Professor," he began. Then his voice broke. "What is the emergency?
"What is it?" Ulrich demanded. "The mirror," said the harried-looking man. "Halfway up the ring wall, it slid off the carrier and cracked."
The Large and the Small. Ulrich shot to his feet.
"Cracked!" he shrieked.
The man on the screen looked as if he'd rather be roasting on a spit.
"Yes, sir. Halfway up the slope, the rig slewed off the road, and the mirror slid off and cracked. Too much torsional strain, even in the frame that was holding it."
For an instant, Trudy thought that Professor Ulrich was going to have a stroke. His face went red, then chalk white. His fists clenched at his sides.
"How could it slip off the road?" he demanded. "How could you allow such a stupid criminal thing to happen? You've ruined everything."
The man on the screen looked weary, spent. His bearded face was sheened with perspiration, his dark hair matted, plastered over his forehead. But his expression hardened as Ulrich berated him.
"Look, Professor, I tried to warn you about the risks. You try lugging a 100-meter-wide chunk of glass across those mountains. I told you it'd be chancy. Don't you understand that we're in a race against time, and you've ruined 2 years' work? 2 years' work!"
"In a race?" Trudy asked herself. Then she remembered that the IAA was building a humongous interferometer in space. Professor Ulrich wants to beat them, she realized. He wants to get the Farside Observatory running before the IAA can complete its project. Holy spit, no wonder he's blazing. Ulrich slumped back into his chair, then stared at the screen with undisguised contempt.
"You built that road, Mr. Simpson. You vouched for it. You told me the mirror could be transported across the ring wall safely. You..."
"Professor, I built the road to the specifications that Nate Obermann set out and you okayed. I told Obermann that we ought to make the grading easier, although switchbacks were a risk. But you ordered Nate to push it through as fast as possible. You told us you were willing to take the risks, so now you're paying the price.
Obermann assured me that the road would be perfectly safe."
"Professor, I warned you it would be a crapshoot."
"I don't remember such a warning," Ulrich said stubbornly.
"Transporting that mirror isn't like taking a walk in the frigging park, what with those switchbacks and all. If we'd had more time to build the road better..."
"Obermann assured me,
and I tried to tell you both we needed more time to make the road better. But neither of you listened to me."
With a shake of his head, Ulrich moaned,
"We'll have to start all over again."
"For what it's worth," said the man on the screen, his voice more conciliatory, "I'm sorry about it."
"Bring it back," Ulrich told him. "We'll have to remelt the glass and spin it all over again."
The face on the screen nodded tightly.
"And report to me the instant you get back here," Ulrich added. "I want you and Obermann in my office as soon as you return. The very instant."
"Yes, sir," the younger man said. Then his image winked off.
2 years' work,"
Ulrich muttered again, shaking his head in misery. McClintock spoke up. "Maybe we can repair the mirror." Ulrich gave him a withering look.
"Repair? The telescope's main mirror? It's ruined! Ruined!"
Smiling easily at the professor, McClintock said, "I understand that the mirror's got to have very exact tolerances, but mightn't it be possible to repair it using nanotechnology?"
"Nanomachines?" Ulrich gasped.
McClintock replied tolerantly, "I know nanotech is banned on Earth, but here on the Moon it's used every day. The world's leading nanotechnology expert, Dr. Christine Cardenas, is over at Cellini."
"Nanomachines,"
Ulrich repeated. From the dark tone of his voice, Trudy half expected the professor to cross himself or pull out a silver crucifix. "I could at least meet with Dr. Cardenas and see what she thinks of the possibilities," McClintock urged.
"Nanomachines can be dangerous," Ulrich murmured.
"They have been used to assassinate people."
"That's why they're banned on Earth, of course," McClintock said easily. "But here on the Moon, you don't have 10 or 12 billion crackpots running loose. Everybody here has been tested, examined for mental stability and technical talent, haven't they? The population of Cellini is selected for intelligence and social compatibility. There are no murderers on the Moon, no fanatics or terrorists." Trudy wondered if that was true. She certainly hoped so. Ulrich stared at McClintock in grim silence.